that I really want to play. All right, let's do this. Examples of sex trafficking. I think that would be helpful. Victims can be exploited for commercial sex in numerous contexts, including on the street, illicit massage parlors, cantinas, brothels, or through an escort services, and online advertising. Huh. Like you said, Dr. Demery, the number one state for sex trafficking is California. I don't know why I thought it was back here in Virginia. But then you said also you mentioned something about Texas, and you mentioned one other state. Which was that?
Florida.
Florida. Florida. Yeah, well, that makes sense. Okay.
The circumstances with
If, have you noticed Florida lately? Oh, my God. I don't even know why I want to read this or not. What do sex traffickers do to their victim? In some cases, sex trafficker trick, defraud, or physically force victims into providing commercial sex. In others, victims are lied to, assaulted, threatened, and or manipulated into working under the illegal, or otherwise unacceptable conditions. And I do remember that show of that family. Mm-hmm. That you had on. We're going back about 3-4 years now, aren't we?
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while. And you know, I was so afraid for that family.
Right. Because we couldn't even use their real names. They literally, listening to the girls, it was heartbreaking because they didn't even get to go home. They got out of school, they got in a car, their parents had hurriedly put some stuff in a trash bag. I mean, couldn't even pack.
Uh-huh.
And they left. You know, they're like, they didn't get to say goodbye. You know, they didn't get to go back to their rooms and do anything. It was heartbreaking and scary. But thank God they had a mom and dad who were strong, who cared for them. Even as they were all cramped into a motel trying to rebuild their lives in a brand new city. I mean, can you imagine three girls and a mom and dad and just crammed into this little spot trying to just start all over? I mean, you couldn't take anything. You couldn't really talk to anybody. You just had to run because the threat was that imminent.
That is crazy.
It was amazing.
Could I ask a quick question?
Mm-hmm.
And how, obviously the parents would have to be gainfully employed to regain their freedom and rebuild their household and all. And I hate to get off topic here, but just briefly, if you could you explain? Because when you get hired somewhere, you have to show ID, you got to give them your social security number, and people can be tracked by all of those things. How were they able to skirt that? Did the government help them get different social security numbers or different IDs, or were they in some kind of a witness protection program of sorts, or how did they, even if they moved across country, their social security number and their ID is still the same? How were they able to skirt that, or how were they able to protect themselves and their family?
You know, I didn't explore that part with them. I was more interested during that time as to how did it affect them? You know, how did they even find out about it? How were the girls doing? You know, their mental health. I do know that one of the parents was in ministry work. That's probably different than going to, you know, your normal 9-to-5 seeking a job. But those are actually really good questions. I don't know if the feds helped them. I know the state police did what they could on their end to get them, you know, at least safely to the end of their jurisdiction.
I can tell you real quick on that one, Mike. I have a friend of mine that works in the FBI, and he's called an eraser. They erase you off of the books. No longer an individual. Social security, driver's license, address, your past is blank. Considered erased. And when they do that, nobody can find you. That's one way that they do it, if that helps you understand the way that process works. He's calling him. What they do is they go and they basically erase you from all records so that nobody can track you. No way.
And I know that can be done.
I know it can be done, but again, you'd need some massive governmental intervention. You can't just, right. like Ann just couldn't pick up with her husband and her two boys and move to California and get a new job out here willy-nilly without some kind of intervention. So I know those erasures can happen. It's very much like a witness protection program in so many ways. I just was curious whether it went through that. I didn't mean to get us off topic, though.
No. I do know that if I remember correctly, the girls weren't allowed to have social media. And I, as a matter of fact, the parents have their, just like the one account with a merged name, that the two of them use together. But if I remember correctly, their girls weren't allowed to do any of that kind of stuff. Now, I don't know the ins and outs, like what Reverend Demery does, on how that part works, because I honestly didn't ask. It didn't even cross my mind. I was just more interested into the fact that this family was targeted. And yeah. how could anybody survive that? You know, what is the mental process? You know, what do you do as a parent to get your family, you know, through that type of a situation? And it was heartbreaking, but you know, you've worked that angle. So tell us, you know, Mike, why that stood out for you, because sounds like you're concerned about them being able to follow them no matter where they run.
Right. Because as an investigator, I can find, you know, I had somebody challenge, I don't know if I mentioned this on Boomerang in the last couple of weeks, but I had somebody in my department that was kind of a chest beater, I call them, kind of a Neanderthal. Mm-hmm. And he made reference to my investigative skills, and mm-hmm. in front of all of us in the locker room, I said, I'll tell you what, and we'll just call him Bob. I says, I'll tell you what, Bob, give me 30 minutes and I'll tell you what school your kids are in, how many kids you got, the last time your dog took a poo-poo in the backyard, and I'll tell you who your wife is messing with on the side.
Wow. Wow. But the thing about it is, that's scary, but it's true. I mean, everybody seems to have a digital footprint, so much so that, you know, William loves to talk about AI and how scary it is. I mean, they literally are capturing people's voices, and AI is capable of mimicking what a person sounds like, to the point where the human ear can't detect the difference. So it's amazing what you can do with technology. I mean, Google Earth, that thing, while it's awesome to be able to Google where you want to go and get these instructions, I really don't like the fact that it can show you frame by frame how to get to my house, you know, not just writing down words. I mean, what's the point of looking up a map, you know what I'm saying, or figuring out how to use the directions when I can see, you know, my destination and do a click by click and sometimes just get a picture of people out in the front yard. It's kind of frightening. As a matter of fact, I can see how it's a criminal's playground. It seems like it's built for criminals by criminals, but I mean, if you think about it, who would want this much information for those of us who have no problems like that, you know, thinking that way. Okay, I can see how this can be convenient. But at the same time, for me, it feels like a really bad invasion of my privacy. And don't get me wrong, yeah, other people could get to my house if they wanted to, if they knew my address. But this, you know, if I'm on social media and it says that I'm online and you can backdoor and figure out where I am, that is absolutely crazy. So that's the type of thing that bothers me. And I can get why you would think, okay, if these people have a beat on them like that and they want them that badly, that they may go into hunter mode, and trying to track them down no matter where it is that they run. So I'm glad to know, Reverend Demery, that there was a process, on the other side of that thing to help them rebuild their lives. Cause it sounds like, you know, they would have been even more vulnerable if they'd been in an area where nobody knew what was happening, like the police did in the area they were before. And things could have gotten a lot worse if they didn't have, you know, that additional support. So
the reason I ask the question, Ann, is because I tend to be rather, I have empathy, and I put myself in the parent's shoes for that moment that you were telling the story. And it's like, what would I have to do? Mm-hmm. How could I protect myself and my family? How can I make sure that in a day, a month, a week, a year, that they're still safe and that they haven't found us? And my wheels just started spinning as an investigator. How can I build a concrete wall around me so that the evil people in this world can't get to me and my family? And that's why I was asking the questions, because I empathize with people. I care about people, and I don't want to stop caring about people. That's, my life was built on that. My parents ingrained that into me. So that was the purpose behind asking if they were able to, you know, protect themselves in a really strong way.
Well, no, you've raised some really good questions for me, because, you know, we brought that up, on the show in order to help people be more vigilant and to protect their families. But now, you know, I'm like, did we give people hope, or given what you just told me, what can a person do really? If somebody targets their kid, buys and quote unquote pays for them and wants them, and they find out about it, what are the alternatives? I mean, do they need to contact the FBI and get into this erasure program, like Dr. Demery said? Do they need to just contact their local police? How do you get it to stop completely?
Well, I don't know if you can make it stop completely. All you can try to do is lock your doors, so to speak, to put barriers that make it very difficult for the evil in this world to get to you and your family. And the first line of defense is to be aware that it is occurring and that it can be you, can be your family, because there's a tremendous amount of money that's changing hands to cause these things to occur. So absolutely, I would get to law enforcement. I'd get to, like our department, like I said, has a task force that works with other agencies together combined, because they're stronger that way. And I would get to them and seek out their help, their advice, their security, their ability. And that would be step one.
Well, Reverend Demery, you seem to be, you know, much more well-versed on this than I am. The people that you learned about, were they able to rebuild their lives? Was it, I'm just wondering now, you know, because listening to this other family story of how difficult it was, I can only imagine what it's like to have to take on a brand new name, you know, and start completely from scratch. Cause that sounds, that makes it sound even worse than what, you know, I was already told about.
Well, you know, I talked to this friend of mine, and he said that part of his test was that they would get one of their top investigators, like Mike, to find someone that they erased. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure Mike is very good at what he did and does and knows a lot more about the investigation part than I do. But they would take a person, have them try to find them after they were erased. Mm-hmm. And that was part of his exam.
Wow.
Certified, you know, but the process is this. And he couldn't tell me, you know, with a lot of specific details and whatnot, because a lot of it's confidential and whatnot. But the fact is that, and I want to get Mike's opinion on this, is that if you want to live, mm-hmm. if you want to thrive and take care of your family, there are drastic measures you have to take. And that's just an unfortunate thing sometimes, because we live in a fallen world. I mean, I was coming, and William will tell you, my daughter, you know, I put a tether on her, a thing on her wrist. I had one on mine, and there was a little tether that went between the two of us, because I was not letting her out of my sight.
Right.
During that time, I mean, people said, well, dog. Well, what my dog was all the time.
Exactly.
Worry about her being taken. You know, somebody probably cut her, but she never was out of sight. Mm-hmm. So the a fallen world, you have to take breath. So I was joking, but you know, and my,
you're breaking up again.
How about now? Is that better?
Better.
I don't know why I'm breaking up. But Mike can attest to this. If somebody breaks into my house, mm-hmm. I do. I would tell you, you better know Jesus. You're going to go to meet him. down.
For better or worse.
So for better or for worse. And so the thing is that you have to take drastic measures because we live in a fallen world. Mm-hmm. And part of what I was talking about in my sermon today in Matthew chapter 28, Jesus said, all authority has been given. And here's the key. He gives us that authority too.
Amen.
How we use it. The Greek word for authority is exousia. Mm-hmm. And what it means is beyond just the authority part, because with authority comes power. Mm-hmm. With authority comes might. Mm-hmm. With authority comes strength. And you have to be careful how you use it, and you do not want to abuse it. Mm-hmm. And so the point being, if any man is going to take care of his family, take care of his house and property, sometimes, not all the time, have to drastically. And unfortunately, the people that get under these protection programs have to uproot their lives and change things that are a normal part of their day-to-day routine. They just have to realize, hey, this is something that I have to do to survive. And you or your husband, Dan, for example, I think would do the same thing. And AJ and your other son were potentially going to be harmed. Wait, you guys would take drastic measures.
Right, right.
To do to protect them. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, that's the thing. Somebody were to threaten my wife, I would probably be in jail.
You going down?
One of the things, you know, being a black male, 6'7", 400 pounds,
wow. You know,
I'm going to probably intimidate most people. Mm-hmm. So the point is that, you know, you have to be wise, you have to be knowledgeable, and you have to be prudent. But unfortunately, we live in a fallen world. You have to take drastic measures to do things to protect the house.
Well, I will say, given what you and Mike have added, it makes sense to me now, you know, why they were so careful. You know, they were, when I learned of the story, it was, you know, because I befriended, the mother, and we became friends and we talked, and she entrusted me with it. And I was like, oh, I'd love for you to tell that story. And, you know, she's like, well, and, she talked to her family. And then, you know, they were like, well, we couldn't, say our names. We have to do it, you know, under strict, you know, parameters. And so it makes sense now if they've had to rebuild, you know, their identities, that they couldn't say who they really were, on the air. Especially if they're given the details that they're giving and it may be enough for somebody to find them who's still looking for them. I mean, it's sad that even all these years later that they're still that concerned about it. I don't know. Would they give up after? I mean, if you have somebody, seems like if it's pedophilia or something like that, that those people have a type, you know, a specific age group. And once those kids grew up, they wouldn't care. You know, or wouldn't want them. I don't know. Maybe it's a vindictive type thing. Mike, do you have any experience with why they would continue to hunt down a child who may not fit their specific
parameters
type
anymore? Yeah.
Yeah.
My best guess at right off the top of my head is if somebody lost money going after these people, they're going to be really angry. It's like if you supplied a dealer, if you were the drug supplier and you gave $100,000 of drugs to somebody who's going to supply it on the street and pay you back for those drugs, and the drugs got taken in a raid or whatever, and that drug supplier lost $100,000, do you think he's just going to go, oh, well, you know, he had bad luck? No, they're going to want their pound of flesh.
Wow.
And people can be extremely vindictive up until the point where they don't even care about the money anymore. They just want, the pound of flesh. They want the revenge. And as Dr. Demery mentioned throughout this entire day today, it's like we do live in a very evil world. And the more we talk about it, the more people will understand that evil is out there, and that you can do things to protect yourself, and you can be more aware, and you can talk to your neighbors. And knowledge is power.
Right. Mm. Well, my thing is, you know, even if you're not a person that's on the receiving end of the sex trafficking, human trafficking, I think we as citizens still have a whole lot of responsibility into what our government is doing to stop it. On the one hand, you have those instances, like for instance, here in recent years, we've been hearing a lot about Jeffrey Epstein's of the world and those folks and their friends being in trouble. But very often, if you break up a, say, a sex trafficking ring that has to do with, you guys know about those places people go and it's supposed to be a massage parlor, but it's really a sex parlor, so to speak. But what they'll do when they raid those places is they'll arrest the people who have been trafficked and prosecute them for prostitution or something like that. When in actuality, the real perpetrator is the person who owns the establishment and all those other people they're connected with that are supplying them with the quote unquote staff, that's being additionally mistreated and abused by the system. So I think we need to be advocates for a complete overhaul of how we investigate, the people involved and how we prosecute those involved. Because if the person who's been victimized shouldn't again be victimized by a system that should protect them. That's just wrong on so many other levels.
You know, that's
it. No. The man got silence. I must have really said something.
I think you did. I know you did. I think you were addressing that to Mike, I believe, right? Or were you?
No, I was just talking in general.
Okay. Yeah. Oh no, that's okay. That's okay. And also, I was thinking about something because when I first gave the definition, I said, let's see, it was someone who is moving. It could be someone taking someone to another country or another area. So I got a question for the panel. Would you consider someone who adopted, say, some young girls or young boys for the purpose of sex trafficking or sex, whatever it is, through adoption, and you have nefarious individuals doing that, would you consider that sex trafficking, Mike?
Oh, absolutely. Is there money changing hands?
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be money changing hands. I guess that's my
question. They're skirting the normal routine or the normal way to go about those things. And if they're doing that, it's probably for nefarious reasons. There's a purpose behind them hiding it. Uh-huh. Or once again, that they're making money off of this stuff. And absolutely.
Well, so foster parents, let's say you don't necessarily have to adopt someone, but you become a foster parent. Now these foster parents are getting paid, aren't they?
Yeah, they're getting paid a whole lot of money, and they're the vast majority of them, in my experience, what Cece was talking about, Dr. Sims was talking about on her Thursday program, Cece's Kitchen, is that many of these people, they pocket the money, they use it for their own gain, they get Cal cards, which are like a welfare card, so they can buy food and stuff, so they get all these freebies from the government, but a lot of it doesn't trickle down to the kids. Even Dr. Sims brought up the children that were caged out here in Southern California and left in horrible conditions, not even allowed to use the bathroom. They were given buckets. And fortunately that they were saved. But, a lot of these people that put themselves forth as being caretakers and looking after these kids and helping them to be safe and all, a lot of it's a scam because they know when the welfare workers are coming out to check on the kids and everything else, they're told in advance. So everybody gets cleaned up. Everybody gets happy. The kids get told, say this, don't say that. And they threaten them. And there's, in my experience, in my county, doing what I did with regard to children and women and such, it's horrid. It's horrid. And there's not enough parameters. There was a young child up in, not Ventura County, Los Angeles County. In my mind, it's kind of Swiss cheese, but between the little boy's mother and the boyfriend, he was tortured to death.
Mm.
I think it was up in Lancaster, as I recall. And the welfare workers had been there over and over and over. This kid was had broken bones. He had burn marks on him from cigarettes, had wounds that are part of being abused. And he eventually died from all those things. And both the mother and the boyfriend ended up, rightfully so, in jail. But, I mean, that's not necessarily the exception to the rule. There's a lot of abuse going on, even within a given family, where one of the parents or both the parents are the biological creator of that life. So, yeah, there's a lot of ugliness out there. And Dr. Demmer, he knows.
There he is. And Dr. Demmer, we're going to go to you. Because the next thing I want to talk about after this, what age group, oh God, this is so sick. What age group do sex traffickers target? Here are some important facts. Children account for half of the victims of human trafficking. In fact, the average age that a young person becomes involved in sex trafficking is 12 years old. Oh, now these are some very, very sick individuals, Dr. Demery. Now, if the victim is a minor, no force, fraud, or coercion is necessary to prove trafficking. I mean, 12 years old, come on. I mean, I don't know what the sentence is or what kind of sentence that these just evil people would get. I hope it's life without the possibility of parole. Because you are taking someone's life. Now, this is something that's astonishing also. What is the life expectancy? Now this is deep, folks. What is the life expectancy of a sex trafficking victim? Victims experience emotional and physical pain during, like you were talking about, Mike, including torture, disease, shame, starvation. Mm. Okay. Let's see. Broken bones, burns, concussions, mutilations, infections, forced drug use, and permanent organ damage. Permanent organ damage. The average life expectancy of a trafficking victim is 7 years. Mm. I mean, this is so sad, folks. Dr. Demmer, I'm going to go to you because there was a story that you I believe and I covered a few years back, and it was about this preacher that adopted this young girl. Okay, I'm not sure whether they became foster parents or they were actually adoptive parents. I believe they adopted this girl, and the preacher and some of his preacher buddies were used to have. I mean, used to take turns having sex with this girl. In his church. Mm. In his church. Come on. Can you imagine this? This guy, you go to church, and a lot of us do go to church, and this is one person that you don't expect to harm your children or molest young girls or whatever it is, but you have a lot of nefarious preachers out here, Dr. Demery, that are involved in this. They'll do things like this, yet they're going to put on their robe and get behind a pulpit. I mean, I'm surprised the Lord didn't set the pulpit on fire. I'm surprised, you know? It's just amazing to me. Dr. Demery?
Well, I am of the firm belief. I hope you can hear me okay and I'm not breaking up. Mm-hmm. I am of the firm belief, and I have great trust in him. I have great trust, but I am from the firm belief. Anybody, I don't care who it is, anybody, from the Pope to a poor person on the street, given the right situation, you are subject to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I have come to believe that in life. And like I said, and I'll say it again, and you've heard me say this story, William, you've heard me tell this story before. And Mike, you know, I know it's on the thin line of breaking the law. But drastic times, drastic situations require drastic
measures. And drastic measures.
Extenuating circumstances require extenuating responses. My, and I tell this story with great intrepidation. My daughter, her grandfather was molesting his mom and her auntie. When I found out about that, because we all had to go to counseling, and I heard this story before, and I said, I don't need to go to counseling. And oh, no, we want, this is group therapy, we need, I said, no, I don't need to go. So they sent me to go. And they said, well, you know, Miss, we want you to, give your comment, because I was quiet, I didn't see. I was a cop at the time.
Uh-oh.
I think I was in the department at the time. And I looked at my father-in-law and I told him, I said, if I find out if you molested my daughter, I said, we'll cut you up into little pieces and spread you out. And I said, they will not find you.
Wow.
That's a promise to you. Nothing else.
That's all the therapy you need, partner.
So that's a little on the crazy end. I apologize for that.
I don't know why you're apologizing for it.
That is right. You meant it then, you mean it now.
Absolutely.
I would have been everywhere. As a matter of fact, I wouldn't have cut you up. I would have melted you and let you go down the drain.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry. Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to tell you, I remember my daughter, has a friend, and I don't believe she still has this business or not, or is still in the same business, but, she was a travel agent. And travel agents, they get a lot of perks. And so a lot of times she would have free trips, and I don't know exactly how they get these things. Maybe perhaps if you book so many trips or, vacations or whatever it is, you will get bonus points where you can have free trips on your own. And so often she used to travel and a lot of times out of the country, and she would take, and my daughter would go along, her and a few other friends. And she was telling me about this time that when she went to Jamaica, and she said, yeah, Dad, oh, this very wealthy guy out here in Jamaica, you know, he wants to marry me. Mm-mm. I said, huh, okay. And he said, and he has a beautiful home. He was telling us about this beautiful home that he has, away from from inland. I mean, just way out in the, you know, in the woods somewhere in the country area somewhere. And I'm going to tell you, all this, excuse me. I said, hell no.
This is not taken. I am not Liam.
No.
I can't come get you. I don't have that special set of
Absolutely
skills.
Not.
Use common sense and don't do that.
No.
Thank you.
Oh, she's okay. Look, she listens to me. Apparently so. And so I said, no. Oh, look, no question about it. That wasn't even up for discussion. No conversation necessary. She didn't even go, ask me, what do you think? She just told me the story. And before she could get to ask me, if she were going to ask me that, what do you think? I said, hell no. Absolutely not. No.
We will never see you again.
Oh my goodness.
No.
And you know, and you would think in a situation like that, way out in Jamaica, way out in the boonies somewhere. All right. Tell me a smell test. Oh, I didn't have to have a smell test. It was over. But seriously though, and I was serious about this too. What I'm speaking of as well. We have to see, this is the thing about it. You want your children and your loved ones, your women, your wives, whatever it is, you want them to have the freedom of movement. You want them to be free and do certain things without fear. But there's also a thing called vigilance, and we have to be vigilant. You know, have fun, but make sure that you are vigilant. You check your surroundings, check out who you're dealing with. And be careful. This is something. How do you not get trafficked? Be careful about posting too much personal information online, and do not trust friendly strangers on social media that know too much about you or say just the right thing. You got some smooth people out here. All right.
Charming.
Charming. And a lot of times their profiles that you see, guess what? It may be someone else, right? You might have this old cat or, maybe some unattractive cat or woman or whatever it is. And they'll send you a picture of the most gorgeous person that you've ever seen. All right.
I know your type.
Oh, absolutely. So posting things online, ladies, I see things online all the time. Well, so-and-so, this is so dangerous. I'm at, so-and-so. I'm on the way to the mall. I'm here. I'm there. And guess what? You got people that are reading your posts. Oh, that's where you're going to be?
Catfishing.
Right.
Absolutely. Be careful about that kind of stuff. And also, just because, you know, the devil has sheep clothing on sometimes. Just because someone has a lot of money, a great job, or a position, we're talking about preachers, it could be a politician, hint, it could be people that you, a preacher, or it could be a school superintendent or a principal in a school or something like that, which leads me to this clip. I think we have it for you right now. I want to play this clip for you. Because this is scary too, because all of us have or had school age children at one time, if not now. All right. So I want you to listen to this.
Texas superintendent. Well, you got in trouble. Let's put up the picture for a mass. Soliciting Michael Stevens, a North Texas school district superintendent, was among the multiple suspects arrested for online solicitation of a minor. Stevens allegedly sent explicit photos and asked for nude videos and images in return, according to Constable Rosen. It's also alleged that some of the photos sent were taken in his office. The office paid for by tax dollars. In his conversation, Stevens had reportedly planned a trip to Houston to engage in. That's according to Rosen. Stevens is a former coach, principal, and assistant principal in various districts around the state of Texas. We're going to come back to that in just a moment. There's more. In addition to Stevens' arrest, Precinct 1 detained six more men who were charged with online solicitation of a minor. Kevin Barahona allegedly had condoms when he went to meet with who he believed was a 14-year-old girl. Investigators said Aaron Gutierrez believed he was meeting a 16-year-old and also brought condoms. Arturo Gonzalez allegedly went to meet a 14-year-old. The investigator said he tried to speed off when he spotted law enforcement instead. Anthony Randall Jacob had condoms when he allegedly tried meeting with a 15-year-old girl. Investigators said Luis Hernandez also brought condoms to meet a 14-year-old girl. Robert Fabila was accused of driving to Houston from Waco to engage in relations with a minor. An investigator said he has 60 pair of used girls' underwear with him. Stevens was headed to Harris County on Thursday to face the charge against him. The rest of the suspects are out on bond. Let's put up the picture of the superintendent again. According to the current report, Stevens has held positions in the district and various districts around the state of Texas as a coach, a principal, an assistant principal, and now superintendent of schools. I highlight this story because this is the reality of many monsters like them, especially the superintendent, who had a long history of intentionally seeking positions of public trust in order, this is my opinion, in order to engage, in order to engage in the, let's call it perversion, he is alleged of doing. Now, naturally, he will go through a process. It is called due process. Here, this is the court of public opinion. I am not the court of law. He will get his rights afforded to him. The evidence, however, is overwhelming, including the data, forensics, that shows the back and forth conversation. Now, this is something that's truly adversarial to the progress of a young person, right? Here's what I'm not hearing. I'm not hearing anyone in Texas talk about investigating the various other positions he has been in prior to becoming superintendent. I don't hear that there's a massive investigation into all institutions that he has served as an executive leader over as it relates to children. I also do not hear lawmakers proposing any laws, policy, nothing. This actually is against the progress of children. But I guarantee you, if this would have been, let's say, a book that talked about black oppression in 1958, and a student said, I'm uncomfortable because the parent told them to say it, all of a sudden, there's a massive movement around getting rid of that book, getting rid of that teacher, and possibly even codifying it into law. They are literally making laws based on opinion and review. A review of a book? Well, you don't like it, let's ban it. We can't ban it. What do you mean? We can just make a law and say it's banned. They're not dealing with the issues that our children are actually facing. That's my point. They're not going to make policy changes.
I'm going to stop that right there. This was a superintendent of schools. Did you list all of the, hear all of the other positions this gentleman had? I'm not even calling him a gentleman. No.
Because he's definitely not one.
No, no. He was a principal, assistant principal, a coach, a superintendent, okay? And him and these other six individuals, and, you know, apparently, they were all charged together. So apparently, from what I gathered from the story, I don't know what you guys gathered, that they were all in this together. Now, soliciting and targeting, other, young girls around the state. This is absolute. Now, these are people that you would otherwise, or they are in a position of trust. Mike, they're in a position where they have access to your children. They have all of their records. They know where they live. Apparently they have their phone numbers, email addresses, and things of that nature. And to say that this is in a, this happens in a vacuum. No. This is happening, folks, today as we are speaking around the country. So I'm going to go around the table here, and let's talk to our co-host here. And I mean, this thing is just so troubling for me. And I think that's why I'm having trouble finding words, because how do you explain something like this? Now, I also, when I posted this, I talked about sex trafficking and mental health. And I wish Dr. Sims was on, because this is her, was on with us. And perhaps we're going to visit this again. I would like to have her input on this. They've got to be sick individuals, which is, these are symptoms of mental illness. But you can't let them off the hook and say they go to court and plead insanity and let them off. You can't do that. But let's talk about people that in positions of trust. Well, you're talking about preachers. You're talking about teachers. You're talking about principals, superintendents of school, people that we entrust our children with. Mm. All right? You take areas like the Boy Scouts or the Girl Scouts, where, and you have to understand that the reason why a lot of these criminals go into these positions, one of the motivations is to have access to children. Mike, right. In your experience, I'd like for you to talk about that a little bit.
Well, again, people are very opportunistic, and many of these people are doing it for their own personal gain in one way or another, whether it's monetary gain or the thrill of whatever their kink might be. But our biggest problem is a degradation of society. We our morals are lacking every day. They seem to get lesser and lesser. So when there's no morals involved and there's no shame involved, people, they don't have an internal mechanism to say, I shouldn't mm-hmm. be doing this. When you go to other countries, and I'll give you just a short example here. If you go to other countries, most of the other countries, their prisons, their jails are very small and most of them are empty. Yet here in America, our jails are massive and overcrowded. Mm. Why? Because in other countries, if you did something you shouldn't have done, not only did you shame yourself because of your lack of morals, you shamed your entire family and maybe the area that you came from. So mm-hmm. you were a blight on society. So society actually handled you and took care mm-hmm. of you rather than the institutions of supposed becoming a valuable member to be put back into society once you've been rehabilitated in our systems that really don't rehabilitate at all or mm-hmm. very, very little occurs. So mm-hmm. why is it that in America we tolerate this stuff as a society? Forget law enforcement for a while. Forget our penal system for a while. Why does society tolerate this? Why mm-hmm. why are, and Dr. Demme is a perfect one to ask this for. Why is it that our morals over, and I was born in 56. So I'll be 67 in a few days. Why is it that I've seen a massive decline in morality in just my lifetime? Why is this allowed? And why do we have so many single-parent homes mm. or kids that are in foster care or kids that are in orphanages or that are being sex trafficked and put into slave labor or mm. something? Why is it that this is occurring here in America? That mm. America is supposed to be the home of the brave and the land, you know, the land of the free and home of the brave. You know, mm-hmm. what happened here?
Well, you know, I tell you, that is a very excellent question. And you also bring in another, an excellent point, because a lot of times in other countries, these clowns don't get the protection of going to jail because the society handles them.
Okay. Right.
You know, and so yeah. they would rather go to jail rather than face what's going to happen to them out in the streets. All right. It is absolutely astonishing that these things happen. And again, talking about the area of putting our children not knowingly in the hands of these perpetrators, because you don't expect your child to go to school and be molested by a teacher or principal and not a superintendent who has access to everybody in that district. These are things you don't, I grew up, I was a Boy Scout. Love scouting. And these weren't even issues that we had to face, thank God. Mm-hmm. Okay, I learned a lot, enjoyed it thoroughly. And when I was hearing about these things happening, in other areas, around the country, I was astonished by this. I loved being a Boy Scout. I just loved doing that. And it was just something that never crossed my mind because these things didn't happen, in my area that I know of. They just didn't happen. Ann, I want your take on that. Then we go to Dr. Demery.
Well, as somebody who was molested as a child and an attorney who used to represent the state in child abuse and neglect cases, I personally,